Welcome to the Immigrant Stories Program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Alex Sanchez. Alex is one of the original founders and now serves as the executive director of Voces Unidas, the first Latino-created and Latino-led advocacy group in the Tri-County region. Alex is an experienced executive and community organizer, and he's led other nonprofits, managed his own political consulting firm, and has extensive corporate and government experience at senior management level. He's also the proud son of Mexican immigrants who grew up in El Jebel and attended Basalt schools. Alex is the first in his family to graduate from high school and receive college degrees from both Colorado Mountain College and Colorado State University. Welcome, Alex. It's great to have you back on the Immigrant Stories program. The last time we talked, you were on in 2019 during COVID.
I remember.
Crazy things happening. But one of the good things that came out of COVID was the birth of Voces Unidas. I wondered if you could talk about how that happened and some of the work that you're doing these days.
Yeah, well, great to see you. Glad to be back, as always. And yeah, I think crisis and COVID certainly shocked the entire world, certainly our communities in the Central Mountain High Country region. And I think when you have a crisis that impacts all of us, you start to see a lot of the holes within the system. You start to notice some of the gaps, some of the challenges that as communities, as governments, as ecosystems, we have created or helped to create. And I think, 150 Latinas and Latinos during COVID in 2019 decided to begin to work together. And one of the results of these 150 Latinas and Latinos from the greater Roaring Fork Valley coming together at the beginning of what became a worldwide crisis, we recognized quickly into the crisis that Latinas and Latinos needed to be part of the solution, that our voices, our contributions, our perspective, and our leadership was desperately needed in a valley, in valleys that traditionally have had an excess of nonprofits. I think there's like more than 1,000 plus registered nonprofits in the Vail and Aspen region alone, just because of the concentration of wealth. Yet not a single nonprofit was sort of created by Latinas and Latinos, where Latinas and Latinos came up with the vision, the mission, were in control of the purse, the power, the resources, and that we as a community got to decide for ourselves what is the work that we want to do for ourselves and to further contribute and improve the larger communities. And so I think that's the beginning of the journey for Voces Unidas during that time.
And it was the crisis that really brought some of these problems that have been there for a long time. I'm sure they came to the fore then.
Yeah. And I think that the Roaring Fork Valley, as you well know, Walter, I think our community has been in the Roaring Fork Valley and other valleys for a very long time. And at every time we saw a crisis, even as a young man growing up in the Roaring Fork Valley, I remember some of these earlier role models, Latinas and Latinos, who would step up and lead. I think in 2019, we just become so large where you have, lots of Latinas and Latinos who left the valley, came back with a lot of lessons learned and experience by being in other communities and practicing those skills. And when we were back in the valley and we saw this opportunity, I think the reality was such that we have the capacity to be able to create a nonprofit from scratch. In fact, we created four nonprofits from scratch. Voces Unidas is an umbrella organization. There's four nonprofit corporations or nonprofit organizations that are registered with the state and with the federal government, because we understood and we have taken lessons learned from many other communities in Colorado and beyond, that to be able to solve an issue, whether it's food insecurity, whether it's healthcare, whether it's immigration, you have to tackle those issues from different angles. And right. The law limits you as to what you can do depending on the type of, you know, IRS designation you have or the type of structure you put together. So we decided it wasn't one organization. We needed an umbrella of organizations to be able to do the work that we wanted to do and model and how we wanted to show up and contribute to the larger mission that I think every community has, which is to make sure all families are thriving, all members of the community have a shot at the American dream, even though sometimes the American dream seems more like a nightmare.
Yeah, speaking of that, I thought of you this last weekend, Labor Day weekend, when I heard about the rounding up of Guatemalan children in the middle of the night. And it was only through the grace of a federal judge that stopped that exportation, mm-hmm. that deportation of those children. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of a story that you told of when you were a young boy. This mm-hmm. This has colored your life as well. Can you talk about that again?
About my own experience, or my mother in this case, being deported? Yeah. And I also think that this is sort of history is repeating itself. I think, you know, I speak to obviously lots of members of our own community who may have not been in the Valley when they were doing raids in the 90s and the 80s.
Right. This isn't a new thing. Yeah.
Yeah, no. I speak to obviously members of the, you know, civic leaders in our community, allies, co-conspirators from our communities who also, you know, think this is sort of the worst time in American history. And I may agree, but I also remind both my community as well as our allies that we've been here before. Whether it was, you know, during other federal or other presidents who came after Mexicans and rounded up millions of Mexicans.
The Repatriation Act in the 30s, the Operation Wetback in the 50s.
Yep. Absolutely.
I mean, Latinos and Latinas have had to endure this for generations.
And I think the older generations, I include myself in that now, those of us who grew up in the Roaring Fork Valley, who have been part of the community for a long time, whose parents were the ones who sort of migrated when we were still a small valley and they were sort of we were a small population. We remember some of the raids, right? They've attacked Aspen, they've attacked Vail, they've attacked workers, they've separated families left and right. My family, not obviously excluded. My mother was deported. She was detained in a raid at that time. It was not a targeted operation where they were coming after one individual. Basically, they came to a bus stop in El Jebel and they waited for workers who were getting off raft up buses in El Jebel. And that was one of many operations that they had targeting passengers of Rafta and other workplaces. And my mother, along with my uncle, along with other relatives and family and community members, were part of that raid in El Jebel, you know, back when that happened. I think it was December. I think my mother spent Christmas at the facility in Denver. It wasn't the Aurora facility as we know it today. Back in those days, it was a different facility, but nonetheless in Denver. And so I think that's the history of the Roaring Fork Valley, and many of the generation of, you know, either immigrants or daughters and sons of immigrants who are still in the Roaring Fork Valley and thriving, we remember that. And so part of the sharings of lessons and making sure that people look deep within the tools and the resiliency that we have built over time and over the years, because that's what we're going to need as communities and as community leaders to be able to survive and be resilient and continue to build to make sure that people are protected, the families have what they need, that we continue to harvest the power that is within humans to be able to use our voices, to be able to tell our stories, to be able to hold governments accountable, to be able to participate in the democratic process, to be able to vote, to be able to elect better leaders. Because I think those are the solutions that we have in our toolbox to make sure that America keeps its promise, and that we don't lose sight, in spite of sometimes having bad people who get elected, or the wrong people who get elected, or people with bad intentions that want to harm humans get into power. We still have these tools and we still have to use them. That's the history of America. That's the history of the world. And we can't lose faith in some of these tools and democratic processes.
Keep your eye on the prize.
That's right.
As our Black friends would say. But this kind of casual cruelty that's been inflicted on immigrants, and particularly children.
Yeah.
Talk about, if you can, the trauma that you've carried, that your family has carried from that incident with your mother. Yeah, that was in the past, but it wasn't something you've forgotten. I think you've carried that and done good work as a result of what happened to you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that you can forget when you're part of an oppressive system, or when your family is attacked and children are left without parents. I mean, this is real trauma. This is, that will carry, they'll stay with you and will also help inform. I think the task here is to make sure that your lived experiences help you strengthen your core and help strengthen and guide your values. And I think in my case, because of my lived experience as an immigrant, having crossed the border with my family a couple of times, even though I have an unbelievable amount of privilege that I acknowledge that many others may not have. And so our journeys may look different, our experiences may look different, but certainly my lived experience growing up as a son of immigrants, having, been a son of someone who was deported, which by default meant that as a child, we followed, obviously, mom. This is why I grew up in Mexico until the age of 9. This is why Spanish is my first language. This is why, I've crossed the border with my family a couple times. And I think that those learnings, those lessons, certainly in my case, have helped to inform the type of work I choose to do, understand some of the pain and suffering and some of the damage that public policies and politicians can do onto humans. And I think the choices that I've made about the work that I do have absolutely been informed by my lived experience. I think my colleagues, my coworkers probably have very similar experiences, probably have dealt with very similar journeys. And I think that all of us have realized that to be able to move forward, to create a better world for everyone, including obviously our own families, we have to be willing to participate, to not shy away from having hard conversations about race, about racism, to be able to participate fully in a democratic process, to help elect better governors, better elected officials, to be able to help be part of solving the problems that impact all of us. There's not a single issue, single policy that a county government or a city council or a school district or Congress does not impact Latinas and Latinos. Therefore, Latinas and Latinos belong in these places where these debates and these conversations are being had about what we need as a community so that everyone thrives and no one's left behind.
Right. Yeah, no one's scapegoated, but there's a lot of that going on right now. What has the last 6 months meant for your organization? Have you had to change the way you do business as a result of this new administration?
Well, we started during the first Trump administration. 2020 was our first year when we formally launched Voces Unidas. I think within a couple months, we sued the federal government, or the president at the time was Donald Trump, and the post office. We won in federal court because at that time, the postmaster general was meddling with the elections by slowing down the mail, which impacted ballots, particularly rural voters, hence us. And so we were two different organizations out of Colorado chose to sue in federal court, and we won. And so I think we started during a hostile administration, and we're yet again in another hostile administration. Our work from the beginning was, while we do serve, while we do fill in gaps when needed, i.e. we have, during COVID, vaccinated several thousand people up and down the valleys. We have modeled how food distribution should be done when we've had crises and people need food. We have also supported people when there's been fires or floods or other emergencies that impact several Latino dominant communities. That has never been our mission. Our mission is to be able to solve the problems we see today by changing public policy so it works for people, so that people don't go hungry because they are being paid less than what they deserve. We rather work on better wages, better jobs, more opportunities for workers in communities, instead of trying to help one person at a time, even though that's also important and needed. And we support those organizations that are doing that work.
Has the last 6 months, just the casual cruelty, alligator Alcatraz, and just making a joke of something that really it hurts my heart to see that this is the best we can do for our people, our people. How has it changed for you? As I know that the Democrats and the Republicans sort of have ignored immigration, so it's not one or the other. We've made immigrants sort of the scapegoat, no matter who. Yeah.
Yet again. Immigration, it's not that complex. It's a human-made issue. We've made it an issue in this country and around the world. Many countries have also created and have contributed to making immigrants a scapegoat. Yet we have created a system that generates more unauthorized immigration than legal immigration, by design, but through policies, by choices. And I've written a lot about this topic. Who benefits from a broken system? A system, immigration system, that does not serve the needs of business. If you're into sort of economic markers, the current broken immigration system that was designed and has been kept alive by all of us,
right, Democrat and Republican,
yeah, absolutely, does not serve the interest of business, right? You can talk to restaurant owners, agriculture, or farmers, ranchers. You can talk to large companies. They need workers. We need workers. Certainly this broken immigration system does not serve the needs of families, the very people who are the backbone of all these economies, the very people who are growing our food, who are picking our food, who are cooking our food, who are delivering our food, and up and down all the supply chains of any possible industry you can mention. It is hardworking individuals who have sometimes sacrificed so much to be able to travel unbelievable journeys, to be able to come, and the sole reason is to be able to provide for the families, to give and contribute to their new communities and to work hard. Most immigrants are law-abiding, decent human beings who are here to work and here to contribute and want to do the right thing. Yet the broken system that we have built has been, by design, kept this way for lots of reasons. And so I think it begs the question, what interest does a broken system serve? These are human-made systems. The solutions are not that complicated.
Right. They're not that complicated.
Policy solutions have not, they're not that complicated. We have outlined them for more than 100 years. We know what we need to do as a country, yet we choose to not have the political courage, to not have the political will to solve them because of the interest it serves. And that has been the same story time and time again. Republican presidents, Democratic presidents, Congress after Congress, we have allowed this to continue, and we, all of us, own the fact that we have kept a broken system broken, and we don't have the will. When actors like the current office holder in the White House comes in and has a horrible agenda, he's not the only one who has implemented horrible things onto immigrants, but he's the current one, then we see how a broken system exacerbates the opportunity to do more harm, and it's painful.
Well,
unfortunately, those who are suffering, those who are feeling it today, are the people who are being kidnapped on the street by masked armed men. The people who are hurting today are the children who are being left behind when their parents are being detained unconstitutionally and kept from coming back. This will not stay within just the immigrant community. The next day, it's going to happen to more of us. The pain that the community and society will feel when you don't have people going to work, when we can no longer pick the food, we can no longer cook the food, we can no longer deliver the food, we can no longer be part of the supply chain, we can no longer be the backbone of the economy. When they choose to come after more people who may disagree politically, now we're getting into more philosophical in terms of political values. When you have a government that's creating the Department of ICE or Immigration and Customs Enforcement, I think ICE as an agency with the resources that have been allocated by our own politicians in Congress will become, I believe, one of the largest federal police units in the history of this country. And I believe it is larger than, I think, four or five countries' military spending combined.
Caitlin Dickerson, who is a Pulitzer Prize winner, writes for The Atlantic, says that ICE and Immigration Customs Enforcement budget is larger than the annual military budget of every country in the world except the United States and China. ICE is getting more money than any other law enforcement agency in America. That's $175 billion with a B. So what gives you hope in this environment?
Well, I know it's difficult in these circumstances to be, you know, optimistic, to be hopeful, yet we have to.
Yes.
We have to know that the end goal is for the opposite of what's happening. And we have to continue to fight with our words, with our voices, with our votes. We cannot stop doing what we know we need to be doing. We need to continue to advocate. We need to continue to be visible. We need to continue to be present, even in scary times. Because democracy and the systems that still exist in a democracy, we have to use it to make sure that we protect the core and continue to challenge at every level. And we need stronger, better elected officials at all angles, because whether you're a council member, whether you're a school board member, whether you're a church leader, whether you're organizer that's organizing workers or everyday people who is organizing your neighborhoods, we need you. We need all of us working together and collaborating, because they're coming for some right now. They're going to come for more. And the stronger we are, the more organized we are, the better we will be at continuing to be resilient and to outlasting some of our oppressors.
That was Alex Sanchez, executive director of Voces Unidas. Because of the ICE raids in Western Colorado, Voces Unidas has established a rapid response effort and a hotline that is staffed 24 hours a day to respond to calls and report ICE activity and help family members whose relatives have been snatched off the streets. The rapid response team has documented over 100 cases in Western Colorado. If you'd like to assist Voces Unidas in their efforts, you can call 970-340-8501. Again, that's 970-340-8501. Or go to their website, vocesunidas.org. That's V as in Victor, OCESUNIDAS.org. A very special thanks to Alex Sanchez and the Voces Unidas members for all they do to make Colorado a safe place for all of us to build strong communities. And speaking of building community, let's take a minute to talk about Community Access Radio, one of those shining examples of democracy in action. It's a radio built by neighbors, run by neighbors, where everyone, and that is everyone, is welcome. As you know, there are folks who are doing their damnedest to take the community and the access out of radio. We can't let that happen. Do what you can to keep KDNK, our little jewel, the neighborhood radio, alive and well. Thanks for listening.